In chapter 1 of Ruth, we met Ruth and Naomi as they journeyed from Moab back to Judah. In chapter 2, we saw Ruth in the gleaning fields, gathering food for herself and Naomi, and her first encounter with Boaz. But now in chapter 3, we get to another difficult place. Gleaning is just a seasonal activity. It's a safety net, but there's a massive hole inside. The gleaning season is over, the harvest is over, and Ruth and Naomi are about to fall through the hole in that safety net. With hunger gnawing at their stomachs, yet again, Naomi hatches a plan, and so we begin in chapter 3 of Ruth. One day, her mother-in-law, Naomi, said to Ruth, "My dear daughter, isn't it about time I arranged a good home for you so that you can have a happy life? And isn't Boaz our close relative, the one whose young women you've been working? Maybe it's time to make our move. Tonight is the night of Boaz's barley harvest at the threshing floor. Take a bath, put on some perfume, get all dressed up and go to the threshing floor. But don't let him know you're there until the party is well underway and he's had plenty of food and drink. When you see him slipping off to sleep, watch where he lies down and then go there. Lie at his feet to let him know that you are available to him. Then wait and see what he says. He'll tell you what to do." Ruth said, "If you say so, I'll do it, just as you told me." So she went down to the threshing floor and put her mother-in-law's plan into action. Boaz had a good time, eating and drinking his fill. He felt great. Then he went off to get some sleep, lying down at the end of a stack of barley. Ruth quietly followed. She lay down to signal her availability. In the middle of the night, the man was suddenly startled and sat up. Surprise! The woman asleep at his feet. He said, "Who are you?" She said, "I am Ruth, your maiden. Take me under your protecting wing. You're my close relative. You do have the right to redeem me." Boaz said, "God bless you, my dear daughter. What a splendid expression of love. And when you could have had your pick of any of the young men around. And now, my dear daughter, don't you worry about a thing. I'll do all you could want or ask. Everybody in town knows what a courageous woman you are, a real prize. You're right, I am a close relative to you, but there is one even closer than I am. So stay the rest of the night. In the morning, if he wants to exercise his customary rights and responsibilities as the closest covenant redeemer, he'll have his chance. But if he isn't interested, as God lives, I'll do it. Now go back to sleep until morning." Ruth lay at his feet until dawn, but she got up while it was still dark and wouldn't be recognized. Then Boaz said to himself, "No one must know that the woman came to the threshing floor." Boaz said, "Bring the shawl you're wearing, spread it out." She spread it out, and he poured it full of barley, 6 measures, and put it on her shoulders, and then she went back to town. And when she came to her mother-in-law, Naomi asked, "And how did things go, my dear daughter?" Ruth told her everything that the man had done for her, adding, "And he gave me all this barley besides 6 quarts. He told me you can't go back empty-handed to your mother-in-law." Naomi said, "Sit back and relax, my dear daughter, until we find out how things turn out. That man isn't going to fool around. Mark my words, he's going to get everything wrapped up today." It's the word of God for the people of God. Well, after that poem and this story, you think you've heard everything in church, haven't you? It all belongs here, don't worry. My question for you this morning is, did you notice the presence of God in your life this week? We know God is here. Maybe a voice speaking words of wisdom to us in a hard moment. Maybe as a feeling of calm amidst the chaos. Maybe God is the sudden feeling of wind at your sails, the courage to do something that you know needs to be done. Where did you notice the presence of God this week? It's not always easy, I think, to notice God's presence in our lives. I wish it were. I have to confess that the Bible isn't always helpful in this regard either. It seems like God is always showing up in big ways in the Bible. Chatting with Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, right? Eat this fruit, not that one, right? Or talking at length with Moses or Abraham. God was a pillar of cloud in the desert. How could you not miss that? And then there was Jesus, God in the flesh, a voice you could hear, a hand you could hold. You read certain parts of the Bible and you get the idea that God's presence should be like this, as plain as the nose on your face. And if God's presence isn't that plain, then maybe something is wrong with you or your faith. Was God noticeable in your life this week? Sometimes our answer is yes, and sometimes the answer is I'm not really sure. One reason I love this Ruth story is the way it treats this question of God's presence. Have you been noticing so far where God's presence is in Ruth? God is not a character in this story, not in so many words, right? God doesn't speak out loud to the characters or move around amongst the characters, dictating the action. God is certainly spoken about by the characters in this story. God's name is on the lips of the characters, but we're never exactly sure what God's role is as the story unfolds. It's up to you to figure out what God is doing, which is just like it is in life. Now, we've already seen the deep hardship and struggle and pain in Ruth and Naomi's life, but especially there, we can affirm that God is present. Mostly, God's presence becomes known and felt through human actions. Ruth clings to Naomi. God is there in that act of great loving kindness. There's food, right, that's given graciously to these two women who are hungry. God provides for the needs of those who are poor. God is there, we are sure. There's physical safety given to Ruth by Boaz. God is there in that act of safety. God's presence in the story, as we've read it so far, appears most often in the actions of people on behalf of other people. But now chapter 3, right? Yay, right? Where is God? On the threshing floor. So let's review for a second what happens in this chapter. Hunger is very real, yet again, it always seems to be knocking at the door. And so Naomi hatches a plan. She tells Ruth, make yourself pretty, right? Sweeten your stink with some water and some oil and go to the place where Boaz and his men are threshing grain. And when night comes, make yourself available to this man who's been drinking. Do, Naomi says, whatever he wants you to do. Just when you think the story is about to get us to happily ever after, it gets us to uglier and uglier. So Boaz, remember, is this very wealthy and powerful dude. He has shown more than a little interest already in Ruth back in the gleaning field. Remember all the special attention he showered upon her. Now, Naomi feels like Boaz needs a little bit of a push, though, if he's going to step up and become their redeemer. So Ruth does what Naomi tells her to do. She goes under the cover of darkness and she presents herself as Boaz sleeps among the piles of seed. Now, you don't have to be a literary critic to pick up on the veiled imagery here. Ruth lies with Boaz. She uncovers his feet. And if you do not know that feet is a biblical euphemism, you do now, right? You hear what's happening in this chapter, and you fail to recognize the direct correlation with what happens to young women every day around us, you are blind. Jan Heckler has told us that part of what feels so urgent about her work as a mission co-worker in South Africa to educate young girls is that girls can go to the capital city of Antananarivo and make in a weekend with a foreigner what they can make in a year in the countryside. Or some of you know our partner in ministry, Street Grace, that works on trafficking here in Atlanta. They set up a house in DeKalb County this fall to show it what it looks like when trafficking sets up in the house next door in the suburbs. Ruth has one thing left of monetary value that she can trade for food. Ruth is just like 4.8 million people in our world last year, mostly women and children. She's being trafficked. This story, as I've said, is complicated in so many ways. Boaz is drunk as a skunk. I hope you picked that part up. He wakes up in the middle of the night and, whoa, there's a woman on my feet. In the dark, he asks, "Who are you?" And Ruth answers, "Spread your wing over your maidservant because you are a redeemer." Now you need to know what it is that she's saying. What is a redeemer? A redeemer was a vitally important social role. A redeemer is a man who is the next of kin, whose job it is to step in and save a family member when they have fallen on hard times. One example is that a relative goes deep into debt and can't get their way out. It's the redeemer's job to step in and repay that debt so the family doesn't lose the land. Or a redeemer might marry his dead kinsman's wife so she will not be sold into slavery and her property be lost. Some redeemers were even expected to avenge their kinsman's murder. So this redeemer role, a redeemer is someone whose obligation it is to save a relative, often by buying their freedom. So we know now that Boaz is distant kin to Naomi, and so Ruth is offering Boaz a deal in the darkness of the threshing floor. Ruth puts it to Boaz in a way that he almost can't say no. Patricia Tull, the scholar, translates the Hebrew of Ruth's proposal like this. She says, "I have sought refuge under God's wing right here, under your wing, Boaz. Spread your wing over me." I don't know if you remember last week in the gleaning field, but Boaz invoked that same image of God's protective wing around Ruth. Ruth is now saying to Boaz, "All right, Boaz, you wished God to shelter me. Now you become as God to me. Save me," she says. This is awful, and it is beautiful at the same time. Ruth is risking shame and violation and violence by showing up in this place. She has shown us already she will do whatever she needs to do to secure long-term economic stability, both for herself and for Naomi. So she provokes this man of power and wealth. She provokes him to provide, to embody the divine refuge that he had wished for her. Just as Ruth had become a divine blessing by standing between Naomi and emptiness, Ruth now invokes that intimate relationship between God's will and human action. Now, thank God Boaz, for his part, seems to be a man of integrity. I say seems to be. We're not quite sure. He does commend Ruth's character. He talks about her loving kindness, her chesed, how she came with Naomi to this foreign land, and how she has boldly attempted to secure life for her and Naomi through this marriage proposal. Boaz calls Ruth a worthy woman, the highest kind of praise. She is an ideal woman, he says. Boaz promises that the very next day he will do whatever he can to step up and become her redeemer. That story never tells us exactly what happens between Boaz and Ruth on the threshing floor. It leaves that to our imagination. But just before dawn, Boaz sends Ruth home, carrying with her a hefty measure of his barley seed. So where is God? Here. Where in this story do God's will and human actions blur so that one of them looks just like the other? It is not always easy to tell where God is in our lives. Our lives are messy, and sometimes it's hard to see just what God is up to. I had this story in my mind this past Tuesday as I was listening to the State of the Union. Seems like a non sequitur, but it's not. I was listening especially hard to the very first part, which is my favorite part of every State of the Union, the introduction of the honored guests. These guests, no matter who is president, are always extraordinary human beings, and their stories often make me cry, I'm not ashamed to say, at how amazing and good people can be. This year, we met Rebecca and Ryan Holitz. Ryan is 27 and an officer with the Albuquerque Police Department. Raise your hand if you heard this story. Some did, some didn't. Here's how their story was told on Tuesday. Last year, Ryan was on duty when he saw a pregnant homeless woman preparing to inject heroin. When Ryan told her she was going to harm her unborn child, she began to weep. She told him she did not know where to turn, but badly wanted a safe home for her baby. In that moment, Ryan said he heard God speak to him, saying, "You will do it because you can." So he took out a picture of his wife and their four kids, and then he went home to tell his wife, Rebecca. In an instant, she agreed to adopt. The Holitz named their new daughter Hope. That is the love of God made flesh. Like Ruth for Naomi, this is what God looks like in real life. Ryan Holitz even heard God's voice. "You will do it," God said. The divine will becoming human action. These are the stories that are replete in inspirational messages and in sermons. Look at the hero acting selflessly out of love, saving a helpless victim, a baby in this case. These stories say, you want to see the presence of God? Look at the Savior. Look at the hero. Look at the Redeemer. And I got to be honest with you. I hate these stories. I do. I hate them. Not because the Holitz are not crazy inspiring, right? Not because their example is not worth knowing. It is. But I don't like these stories, not because of the story that they tell, but because of the story that they often leave out. There's always another side of the story, right? And we have to tell that side of the story too, if you're going to say that what the Holitz did is God's will, and I think it is, you've got to affirm the same thing from the perspective of a heroin-addicted mother. God must be in both the one who saves the baby and the one who gives the baby up. Because if God is God, God is always with each of us and for all of us, loving us in God's mysterious way into freedom and wholeness and beloved community. Anything less is not God. So Wednesday morning, writer Elizabeth Brunig asked in the pages of the Washington Post, what happened to baby Hope's mother? That's a great question. Her name is Crystal, she wrote, and she has had a long struggle with addiction. She is in recovery, and as all recoveries from addiction are, it is tender and very much uncertain in its outcome. And just in case you didn't already think the Holitz were amazing, they are actively fundraising to pay for her rehab. But Brunig's essay makes this point that I want you to hear. We have to take the utmost care with the stories that we tell about God. We have to take care with the stories that we tell by telling the whole story. If we're telling stories about God's will in the world, we can never settle for simple, clean stories with neat morals where there are only innocent victims and pure saviors. Yes, we should tell, and we must tell, stories about families like the Holitz and how they are making God's love plainly visible. And we must also then say what God is doing for Crystal, for a heroin addict who just gave her baby up. So come back to Ruth now. We won't ever read this story and say, well, look at God in the goodness of Boaz, in his generosity and his kindness. We won't say that without also saying, what is God doing in the life of this young woman, a woman who is so desperate to eat that she has no choice but to go to a threshing floor at night and throw herself at the feet of a man and beg him to save her? What is God doing in her life? If our stories are just about the Holitz or the Boazes, then our God is a God of the privileged, and that God is not worth a damn. But we already know, because we've been reading this story of Ruth through from the beginning, we already know that God is working and doing mighty things in the life of Ruth. This story, unlike the story that got told Tuesday night, does not let Ruth recede namelessly into the background so that we might focus on the beneficence of Boaz. This is Ruth's story. It's Ruth whose loving kindness set this story in motion in the first place. It's Ruth who shows us in the very first place what divine love looks like when it takes on human flesh. Friends, the whole Bible is of and for people like Ruth. The Bible's Ruth's story. It's Hagar's story. It is also Crystal's story. It's a story of and for every young girl who is being trafficked right now. It's the story of a God who hears God's people crying out in their struggle and distress and comes to bring freedom, all the while saying, "You, my beloved child, are safe." So where do we see the presence of God in this life? It is in the whole story of God's people. God is at work in the hearts of those of us who are powerful to generate generosity and decency like Boaz. God is a redeemer. God is opening locked doors and patiently walking alongside those of us to whom life has dealt a bitter blow. God restores hope to Naomi. And God always sees the desperation of those of us who live in shadows and fear, and God brings dignity and freedom to Ruth. It's not pillars of fire or mountaintop theophanies, so much as it is regular people embodying the divine will for each other. Did you see the presence of God this week? I know you did. When you saw God's will becoming human flesh, once you see it, you can't stop. It really is everywhere.